Very good. So welcome everybody to the How to Get Enlightened 101 class. But maybe you don't call it enlightenment. How to find peace. Peace and stillness and calm. But often when people come to any sort of classes, they always think, what am I going to get out of this? You may have all sorts of ideas about what meditation is and how you can achieve all these amazing things. Just beforehand, I was talking to someone and talking about the times I used to teach meditation in prisons. And the very first time, about 30 years ago, when I taught meditation in a prison, and the prisoners, over 100 prisoners came to my class. There's more than people here. And I was so impressed until one of those prisoners, who was about twice the size of me and lots of scars on him, he was one of the tough guys in the prison. And he put his hand up, can I ask a question? And quite frankly, when anyone that big and tough and scarred can they ask a question? Said, yes, sir. Yes, please. What do you want to ask? He was intimidated. He became a very good friend after a while. He said to me, is it really true that through meditation you can learn how to fly over walls? And that's what he actually said. And I said to him afterwards, well, you know, it takes many, 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 many years, and only a few people can do that, if at all. They were very disappointed. You could see that by the next week. There was only 3 or 4 people turned up to my class. Anyhow. But sometimes, what do you want to attain? What do you want to get out of meditation? Because first of all, you know what life is. Half of your life, or a lot of your life, maybe for some people it's 100% of the life, is always trying to get something. Get rid of a problem, attain something, make something happen. You're always doing so much. And the idea of being able just to sit down and do nothing. You're not trying to get somewhere, you're not trying to attain anything, you're not trying to solve problems, you're not doing anything. You're just sitting there, aware and peaceful, not wanting anything in the whole world. You may think that's hard, but you've done that many times. And when you've done that properly, just let things be. You would have noticed it's some of the most joyful and wonderful and peaceful times of your life. It's one of those reflections I like people to do at the beginning of a meditation. Remember the most peaceful time of your life. The most profound, peaceful, still, calm moments of your life. When were they? And what were you doing? And a lot of times you remember that those occasions when you're very, very peaceful were times when you had nothing to do. It was a time when, you know, you were waiting for some appointment, waiting for a taxi to arrive, waiting for, you know, someone to come, and you had this, what people say, free time. Nothing to do. What I used to call the in-between moments of your life. Much of life is trying to get somewhere, do something. You are traveling, either physically or emotionally, from where you are to where you want to be. But now, this meditation, you're not traveling at all. You are here. You've arrived. As I've often said, you've arrived, baby, you've arrived. I don't know if they still say that, because it's been a long time since I used to watch movies or see the TV, about 45 years. But nevertheless, the idea of like being here and being content to be here, happy to be here, letting this moment, this place be. And I remember here years ago, sort of inventing the way of looking, that because I've got so many responsibilities and so many things I'm supposed to be looking after, and it may be the weekend for you, but what about me? Weekends, you've got to look after this place. And so much work. And then on Sunday evening, we go to Bodhinyana Monastery. Am I supposed to look after that? Somehow or other, I got myself involved in getting a few other monasteries on the way. One in Melbourne, almost got there a couple of weeks ago, but COVID kept me here. I think you put that up, didn't you? COVID or something, I'm not sure. But people said, yay, we kept you here. And a few other monasteries. And so I could be very busy. And I noticed many years ago that when it came to a Monday, had a busy weekend, another 5 days working at Bodhinyana Monastery, and people would come and visit. Like many of you have been to Bodhinyana Monastery for a visit, and you come and tell me, oh, how peaceful is your monastery, how tranquil, how beautiful is the place in which you live. You're such a lucky monk to live in this beautiful forest on the hillsides overlooking the Indian Ocean. That's what they say. And I say, what? You must be joking. Don't you realize how much hard work it is to keep this monastery going and to keep everything in order and to teach the monks and get phone calls from the nuns and phone calls from each one of you and have to go here to give a talk and there to give a talk and do all this other thing and be on the committee meetings, and now we have subcommittee meetings and sub-subcommittee meetings and all these other meetings we have to prepare for and answer questions to and get everything all organized and people with their trouble and difficulties and I have to answer questions and write books and do blah, 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 blah. I said, this is really hard work. And then instead of staying with my objections and my complaints, I realized there's something wrong here. How come I spent all these years building these lovely monasteries and I cannot enjoy them? It's unfair. So what I did, and it worked brilliantly, on a Monday morning, and all the monks know this, on a Monday morning, I pretend to be a visitor to the monastery where I'm the boss. And I like this idea because it is, it's not just being irresponsible 7 days a week, but one morning a week, just getting up with the perception, today I'm a visitor. So if any of the monks gone crazy, not my job. If the electricity has been fusing and starting a fire, nothing to do with me. I'm only a visitor, just like you. Which meant for the first time in weeks or months, I could enjoy the monastery where I live in the same way that you do when you visit. It's beautiful, it's peaceful, it's tranquil, as long as you are not the owner. And I use that for how to overcome so many problems in meditation. Today, when we start the meditation, and you close your eyes, please remember, you don't own your meditation. So there's nothing to attain, nothing to get. It's not yours. You're just a visitor, not a visitor to the hall here, but a visitor to your body and a visitor to your mind. You don't own it, you're only visiting. You know, if you go on holiday somewhere, or go teaching somewhere, sometimes you go and stay in hotel rooms or other people's houses or other temples. When I stay in other people's places, because it's not mine. I don't have to look after it so well. I know they can sleep there and somebody else will clean it up tomorrow morning. Now, don't say, I wrecked the joint, you know, because I don't own it. Yeah, you care for it, but you don't overdo it. So, if you haven't done this already, maybe when you go home this afternoon, Saturday afternoon, how about saying, today you're visiting the house or the apartment in which you live. You don't own it. So you don't have to do any washing up. Leave that for room service or for what's housekeeping, whatever. You don't have to do any cooking. Just order Uber Eats or something. You don't have to do anything. You just relax and enjoy it. Because you're just visiting. And when you're meditating, you're just visiting your body. You don't own it. And your attitude becomes totally different. You can enjoy your body without trying to train it to get somewhere or get rid of things. So that's one of the reasons why your body can relax. But I teach that meditation to begin with, just being aware of your body and calming it down, relaxing it to the max. Sometimes people say, well, that might be okay, but then, oh, I've got to train for a football match this afternoon. Oh, I've got to, you know, go for some test tomorrow. I've got to really train my body. No. Relax your body. Relax it very deep. You're just visiting. I know sometimes people say, well, that's probably, Ajahn Brahm, why you get fat. No, I've got more places to visit in my body than most people. The attitude you have is more important for your health. And of course, I stick to my guns here. That, I don't know why they say that, stick to your guns, but no, I'm venerable. How is my health in Bodhinyana Monastery?
Top quality.
Thank you. If you didn't say that answer, you'd get in big trouble. I'm a healthy monk. But anyway, so when you visit your body, you don't worry about it. You're not anxious about it, because you're just visiting. It makes it much easier to let go and relax. You just start that with your body. You know, I often tell you, I all the time tell you when I do this guided meditation, that you get to the point and the body feels just delightful. It's a wonderful thing as a monk. You know, people think, what pleasure does a monk have? You don't have any pleasure. Well, you know that joke, don't you? Okay, I'm going to tell you just because you were laughing, you were expecting it. This was what my father told me before I knew anything about Buddhism. It's one of his jokes. So you would say, what fun does a monk have? And what's the answer? I never said that. I said none. That's not true. Anyway, they have delight in the body and just this joy, the feeling that the body is really relaxed and easy. Have ever you gone to get a massage or go in hot tubs or just laze in the... We used to have these baths in the old days, and sometimes you'd be lazing in the bathtub, nice and warm and just soaking it all in, really relaxed to the max. Do you remember those feelings? And it's only twice as a monk I've had a bath. It doesn't mean I haven't had a shower. 47 years I've had many showers. But like a bath where you soak in the hot water. Once was when I went to Bhutan and climbed up Tiger's Nest, whatever it's called. That's quite a trek up. So I rewarded myself with a bath. The other time was something else, when a fellow monk, his parents came from the United States and said, what can we give you? And I had a bath. I said, oh, I haven't had a bath in years. I had a hot bath. It wasn't really what I remembered it to be, but it was still something they could give. But anyway, so the soaking, your body just is really at ease. You feel no aches, no pains, and it's the relaxation pleasure. And I often say, when I get to that point in the meditation, it's like when you wake up in the morning, you don't need to go to the toilet. You're in your bed, and it's really cozy. It's your own bed, you know, it's used to you, you're used to it. You've nothing to do, you haven't got to get up early for some reason, you're just in the bed. You're not really that sleepy, but it's just so warm and soft, and you stretch out, and your head's happy. Your whole body, oh, says, I don't want to get up. Why? It's a pleasurable feeling. And that delight of a relaxed body, you can only get that and enjoy it if you realize you're only visiting. If you have all these things you have to do, you have those things to do, but not now. What's done is finished. So you lay there or you sit in meditation and you enjoy every minute of relaxation. You enjoy it. When you start to enjoy things, you don't need to strive and put forth effort to concentrate. I don't know what your favorite TV series is, or your favorite movie, or your favorite sports, but suppose it's like the grand final of something or other. Do you have to concentrate to keep your attention on that event? Do you have to use force to watch, you know, the movie? You're watching Harry Potter. I've got to focus. I kind of let my mind wander. When you watch movies, does your mind wander? It's there on every moment of the movie. Why? Because it's fun for you. So when even your body is relaxed and it's fun, it's so easy to meditate. You enjoy it. And what happens is the enjoyment gets more. I don't know why I wasn't taught this when I first started meditating, but there's something called piti sukha. It's like joy, bliss, which comes in the meditation. It's part of the meditation. It's supposed to happen in the meditation. The Buddha described it again and again and again. Why are human beings afraid of joy, especially religious people? No, you enjoy that. And that, mate, takes the relaxation so much deeper, easily. And it also gives you the lesson on how to take the meditation deeper inside. You look at your mind, the old peaceometer. How peaceful are you today, Ajahn Brahm? If I've got something to do and prove, some jobs to do, then it's very hard to be peaceful. When I realize I'm only visiting my mind, I've got no responsibility at all. I don't have to fix it, get enlightened. I don't need to not be enlightened. I don't need to do anything. Imagine that. You're just visiting with no burdens, with nothing to do, nowhere to go, nothing to become. You're just visiting. How peaceful can that be? You will find all the tension, the blockages, the hindrances will all come when you try to do something or get rid of things. Even if you think you've got problems, mind is thinking too much, wandering too much, sleepy or whatever, for goodness sake, you're only visiting, it's not your problem. Make peace with it. Open the door of your mindfulness to whatever's happening right now with kindness. You're a visitor. It's not your problem. Then you find it's easy to meditate. You're alive, you're aware. That's enough. Don't do anything more. Open the door of your heart to whatever you're aware of right now. The good, the bad, and the ugly, I don't know. And then you find that meditation is so easy. And it comes peaceful all by itself. I did this yesterday when I did a meditation class in one of the corporate offices in Perth. How to keep the water perfectly still. I've done this many times before. I can never hold water still. No way in the world can I hold this perfectly still. When I let it go, don't do anything, relax, leave it alone, make peace with it, open the door of my heart to this moment, the water becomes still all by itself. I don't touch it, I don't make it still. You let it be still. And that's how you meditate. You let your mind be still. It inclines to that place of stillness when you don't do anything. When you just watch with no goals to achieve, no standards to keep, no places you want to go to, no things you want to get rid of. You just watch this moment and you get so delightfully peaceful. And the delight in the meditation, oh, that hooked me. That hooked me how long ago now? I was 18, 19, 50 years ago. I got hooked. I haven't regretted it since. Beautiful meditations. Yeah, it was true. Yeah, it was 19. I was 19 at the time. 50 years ago. Anniversary. Now that's a real good anniversary. That was my first deep meditation. Wow. Because I know it's my 70th birthday soon, but that's nothing. That's just being born. Being born sucks. Am I allowed to say that? Sucks. Anyway, I said it, so. But having deep meditation, that really is worth celebrating. Wow, I didn't realize that 50 years. Anyway, and it might be time. So anyway, this is how we meditate, being a visitor and enjoying the place, with no burdens of responsibility, nothing to attain. And then you attain everything. Okay, so let's get going. Well, it's about 50 years. Crikey. Half century of good meditation. Okay, I should have said, by the way, that those people come to the introduction to meditation class, it's not in here. But never mind, you're here now, so stay. So you close your eyes. Because, you know, you're visiting your body and you're visiting your mind. And first of all, it's normal. Just to make sure that you're in a decent posture, 40, 45 minutes means it's pretty, you know, longish time. You've got to make sure that you're not going to have aches and pains and stuff later on. And then to have a deep relaxation of the body. We do this wonderful awareness and kindness combination, starting from your feet. So I'm aware of my feet now. They're reasonably comfortable. But I just give them a little bit more attention and fine adjustments. And before I leave my feet, I actually talk to them. I ask them, how are you? All that does is puts my awareness down there. And I get to know the feelings of my feet, the sensations, pressure, comfort. And I will keep adjusting those feet until the feet are happy. They're at ease down there. When you get to know your parts of the body, you understand just how they feel, what will happen to them if you put them in a bad position. You become wise to your bodily health. And then move the attention up the legs, up the calves. When I do this, you can do it faster, you can do it slower. I just do this to give you the idea. And move the attention up the calves. You can feel, oh, surprise me, just put too much pressure on that calf. And one of the heels, digging into it. Until I get to my knees. I'm always willing to adjust. And sometimes the knees can have a bit of pressure because they are bent. Some people have had physical injuries. But for me, I just become aware of those knees. Focus on them, like my focus of attention, of my meditation object. I'm doing kind of knee meditation. And I learn how to relax those knees. I can feel some tightness. And I've learned how to loosen that tightness. Until my knees feel really at ease. Like they're sinking into the mattress, the mat underneath me. I go up my thighs. I haven't been doing much exercise except for this morning's walk. So my thighs have seemed really happy, at ease. No aches or pains there. I can still feel them. The thigh feeling. And I learn how to relax it. I go to my butt. It's big muscles at the top of the thighs. I relax those too. Sitting on a cushion. I make sure the cushion is not misplaced. Not too far forward, not too far back, not too far to the left or the right. But pretty in the center there. So even my butt can be at ease. No need to disturb the meditation. And I stretch my back to make sure the back is in a good position, then let go. I feel my back now. Really at ease. Feels great. And I go to the front of my body. All the organs and colon, intestines, tummy. If I feel any pressure there, I pause, zoom in, give kindness, and just watch these feelings just become really at ease, peaceful. After all these years, I've learned how to relax inner parts of the body. Those who heard my talk last night, I think I talked about having food poisoning and being able to relax it all away. No medication, just even not drinking any water or anything, or just meditating there and just let the pain just get so soft and at ease, it vanished. It's not that hard to do. And then the rest of my body, my stomach, lungs, all these organs in the back there somewhere, livers and kidneys and spleens and stuff. Just even wishing them well. Even my heart, giving it peace. You know, your heart does respond to emotional distress, anger, anxiety, fear. So it's not that hard to understand how you can relax your heart, make it peaceful. So it never, never overreacts. And I get to my shoulders, to the top of my torso. Scrunch them up and then let go. And I always get more relaxed than when I started the scrunching. So my shoulders feel relaxed. Neck is a bit tight, so I just made a detour and just moved my head backwards and forwards to relax the neck. But then I go down the arms. Down the arms, past the elbows, past the wrists. And once again, if I didn't do this, I would miss it. I'd miss the fact that my hands are not in a good position. So now I put them in a good position. My body is telling me how to relax. And I'm listening to my body, following its instructions and getting the benefits. My hands now are happy with me. I cared for them. I go back up to my neck. As I've noticed some plants, bushes are flowering. The wattle trees in monastery are fully flowering. So there's a lot of pollen around, some that I'm allergic to. So my neck is itchy. Just spend a little time with it. How are you, throat? How can I be kind to you? And that eases the inflammation I can feel inside my throat. The back of my throat towards the top. When that is calmed down, go to my front of my face and look to see if I can relax the muscles around my eyes and my mouth and forehead and anywhere else there. I can feel the tightness there. And I can also feel that tightness relaxing. And I go to the whole body, sitting here, together, quickly scan up and down, down and up. If I find any place which needs a bit more relaxation, I just go there and pause and learn how to relax, give ease, loosen any tension, soothe any inflammation or pain. And of course, with practice, you become very efficient at this. And great benefits on the meditation on the body. And then this is where the delight comes from me anyway. Feel this joy. A body which is relaxed, at ease, which is cozy, as it were, sitting like this. It doesn't need anything. It doesn't require any work. It's the same as if I'm visiting it. And I stay with that joy, that ease, knowing I don't have to do anything with my body. Just enjoy the delight of relaxation. And I go to my mind. Many people mistake thoughts for the mind. Thoughts are just the ripples or waves on the surface of a lake. Like thoughts on the surface of the mind. Number one, they're just on the surface, they're superficial. And they're signs of disturbance. A really calm, peaceful mind doesn't have thoughts. It just knows without needing to name things, without needing to plan. And I ask my mind, how peaceful is it? I've lived with it all my life, so I can pretty much know how peaceful it is or how agitated it is. And I also next know what makes it more peaceful. What it agitates and what disturbs it. I'm not talking about outside or what's inside. Always remember that the past is what disturbs my peace. And this is not the time to reflect on the past. I will learn much more from the present than I can ever learn from the past. I think of the past, I only choose part of it. The present, I see the whole of it. And as for the future, now is where the future is being made. If I want peace and health and energy, I have to look in this moment where it's generated. If you really come very close into this moment, so your awareness is not spread out to the past and future, you'll find it's easy to stop this inner thinking. Thinking needs some past or some future to exist. In this moment, thinking can't survive, stops for a while. Your mind is relaxing. It's not being held back by the past. It's not being pulled into the future. It's at ease. And that relaxation, even of the mind, is very pleasant. That's what I'm enjoying now. The delight of just being here with nothing to do. Those of you who do breath meditation, I mean, hours of time, breath just comes in by itself. Peaceful, calm. Because it feels delightful. I don't have to force my attention on it. Just what's there. I make the joy of the meditation strong enough I don't need to strive or concentrate or do anything. You're just here enjoying yourself, cozy, relaxed, having no business to do, perform, totally at ease. I'll now be quiet until close to the end of the meditation. getting close to the end of the meditation now. How peaceful is your mind? And why? How relaxed is the body? Can you notice the delight, pleasant feelings of body and mind? It's only visiting. I will now ring the gong 3 times. And the third ringing of the gong fades away. That's a signal to come out from the meditation. Very nice. Okay, so we'll get some questions in a moment. In the meantime, hopefully you enjoyed that. You can't own it and keep it. You've had a good meditation. Sometimes that occurs. Beautiful meditation. You think, yeah, now I know how to do it. The next meditation is hopeless. Why? Because you're always trying to get back to where you were before, instead of trying to be where you are now. Any questions? I thought the question was coming up. Oh yeah, thank you. Any questions from our locals here? Yeah, oh good, yeah. Yes, please. Excellent.
I just wondered, does Buddhism, what is Buddhism now? Does it require a human mind? Or is it also in other space and that? I mean, where does it end in Buddhism?
Okay. First of all, I'm very glad you pointed out that sometimes as Buddhism has become, and especially meditation, quite popular, in Western countries, some of those terms we translated 100 years ago, like, you know, concentration, basically that is not the meaning of the word. Concentration has got nothing much to do with Buddhism. It's a word which Professor Rhys Davids, who was a colonial administrator in Sri Lanka, over 100 years ago, he invented that word as a translation of samadhi. I remember just checking with this professor years ago, who, a Chinese professor, I think she was over in Berkeley or somewhere. But anyway, that, you know, when I started saying that samadhi meditation means stillness, she said, yeah, of course it does. Because remember, many of the Chinese scholars translated the same words, you know, hundreds of years ago, or thousands of years ago, maybe 2,000 years ago. And they always use the word which, you know, from the Chinese translates as stillness, peace, calm, quiet. Concentration you can never maintain. You get tired. And it's also what you do. Stillness is something which you let happen. And even in the Thai forest tradition, my teachers over there, they never mentioned concentration, stillness. Jit Ning Yu. The mind stays still, peaceful. And as soon as you say that, rather than concentration, it does change the whole flavor of meditation. I was fortunate enough to have good teachers when I was young and have a good brain which learned Pali and can understand what these words really mean. Stillness. When you have stillness, calmness, peace, that is a personal experience. It's joyful, it's obviously incredibly relaxation, and the peace goes to incredible levels, not just ordinary peace, peace upon peace upon peace, and has huge amounts of pleasure involved. Of course, that was a surprising thing which I never expected when I became a Buddhist and meditated 50 years ago. Just getting into a nice deep meditation, which is, keep on saying this, a bliss better than sexual orgasm. And it's deep and it's joyful, you can last for hours. What the heck is that? And then you start reading in the teachings of the Buddha. It's exactly what they say it should happen. I mean, really delighting, big time. So those sorts of things, you know, start to, so you don't get that through concentration. What happens is, yeah, they call it the hindrances disappear. Things like all wanting goes. Temporarily, but it's amazing to find out, seeing that they don't want anything in the whole world. You can't get angry. The mind is just poised, still, joyful. No doubt at all. You're clear. Those are the sorts of things which you experience. And the idea of Buddhism and space, human beings, whatever, there are so many different beings in this universe, not just human beings, not just animals. You know, there's people make sort of fun and games or get excited about things like ghosts. Ghosts are like other human beings, other beings in this world. Need some kindness, some feeling of safety and respect. And there's heavenly beings as well. Those beings actually exist. Sometimes you have to get deep enough meditation, you can actually experience those things. But anyway, that's the Buddhist cosmology. Is that what you really meant to ask? Okay, thank you. Thank you for asking a question on the floor. Okay, see what we've got, some questions on this machine. Obviously, I'm an old monk, so I prefer human beings and machines. But there's many people here from overseas. The first one is Australia, Malaysia, Indonesia. These are the yesterday's ones. Okay, so much better. From Vietnam, Germany, UK, Indonesia, Germany. These are people, and you're really most welcome to actually tune in from overseas, because I haven't got a center they can go and learn meditation from. So, Saturday afternoon, I came from Germany, that's 8 hours different. Oh, that's not such a bad, it's early in the morning over there. And from Vietnam. Dear Ajahn, there's so much information about Buddhism which makes me overwhelmed and don't know where to start. What should I do when I begin to investigate and practice Buddhism? Keep it very simple. And don't spend, please, too much time on theories, dogma. It is what works for you. It's like, you know, your car is not working well. You could take it to a garage to get it fixed. If you go to the different garages, you've got to spend so much time working out what garage, what method of fixing a car you have to do. Just go to the local one, if you can, and one which inspires you. Buddhism is not just a religion where you have to believe in this and believe in that. It's how you feel. It's an emotional path more than an intellectual path. And I say that as an intellectual. Cambridge University Theoretical Physics. You realize that would not get you very far. The emotional, the feeling part of it was by far the most wonderful. So don't go for information on Buddhism. go for experience on Buddhism, what meditation is like. Even just things like keeping precepts, coming to the temple, hanging out with monks and nuns. Why? Is that because you're supposed to make good karma? It's not that, is it? You enjoy, you get so much peace and happiness. Where on earth does that come from? It's just association with good people, wherever you find them. It's a delight. And all this today I've just been talking about delight, the happiness, the joy. I think I said to Marcus, looking after me, or I'm looking after him, we haven't worked that one out yet, that I enjoy being a monk. After 47 years, I really get off on it. It's a wonderful career. And you get so much peace and happiness and able to give and serve. Great life. So that you feel that, you experience that. So instead of arguing who's got the right type of Buddhism, if you're arguing, none of that is right type of Buddhism. It's just a feeling, it, the joy in it, the peace in it. And that's something you touch, you feel, you know. And that's what really gets you involved about what Buddhism is. You don't need to know that much. I'm not saying don't know, don't sort of criticize when you want to criticize, ask questions when you want to ask questions, that's fine. But feel more than think. In Vietnam, many countries, we become an intellectual society, an intellectual world. We think too much and feel too little. From Germany, thank you for being here and all your help. How can I find peace when I'm very angry and stop it from, when I'm very angry and stop it from coming back? How can I feel compassionate without crying? Oh, look, what's wrong with crying? Crying is a beautiful, it's one of those emotions, and even it's one of those positive emotions. I have to keep on saying this, but there's a couple of times where I can't help myself crying. It's out of joy and inspiration. One of those places. See the Buddha statue behind me? Is that the one? Oh, I can't turn around. Or the one over in the community hall. That's based on a statue which was found in outside of Benares in Sarnat. Now, when the Turkish invaders came through, you know, about 800 years ago, they destroyed most of the statues. But this one was found underground by the Brits. And it's only got a tiny chip, I think, on its nose, but it's one of the most beautiful statues I've ever seen. Because I'm a Buddhist, it really just moves me every time. They call it the Dhammacakka statue outside of Sarnat. And I remember the first time I saw it, I burst out crying. I went there looking for it, because I knew it was so beautiful, but I never realized how much, and just it just got me. And the second time I went to India and found that statue, I was prepared this time. And I told all the people I was leading the pilgrimage, look, you know, please excuse me, but this really moves me, I don't know why. But when it does, please excuse me. You turn the corner, it was gorgeous. I don't know why, it just really got into me. And the best time was the third time, because I was really prepared this time, I had tissues with me. And I told everybody, look, I know where it is. You know, when I turn around its corner, it gets me every time. And when I turned the corner, they were doing renovations, had a big tarpaulin over it. And oh, it taught me a lesson. You can't have expectations. And oh, never mind. It came all the way from Australia, Perth, all the way to Benares and just outside and just made it to get into the museum. And then, oh, so disappointed. But then the worker, it was a painter, took one look at me. I don't know how this happened, because I can't speak Hindi. I actually never spoke at all. But he looked at me, and he took the paint cover off, so we could all see it. That was so sweet, so joyful. It wasn't tears of sadness. I don't have those, but I have tears of joy, inspiration. So please, Nothing wrong with crying, for goodness sake. Getting angry is when we always try and control things. We try and control things, sometimes things don't go your way. No need to get angry. Life is teaching you a great lesson. So don't give it angry. Give it said humility. Okay, oh, from UK. When we experience something in meditation, where in the suttas can we look to understand what that experience was? Suttas are so big. Depends what the experience is, and sometimes just learn the experience first of all. And just sometimes you don't actually know exactly what it is. But over time, and be patient, maybe years, you'll understand what that experience is. Just like in the last few days, because you know, a couple of days was talking about that experience I had when my father died, and I never felt sad. It's weird, I love my father a lot, and he was a great mentor to me. I always got incredible gratitude to him. But when he died, I never felt like crying. I couldn't understand what the experience was until years and years and years later, when I was a monk, had more time to understand my emotions and realized that it was gratitude which I felt. What a wonderful thing it was to have had him as my father for 16 years. Thank you so much. How could you feel sad about that? How could you cry? I felt I was blessed. I felt so much gratitude that sadness just couldn't come in. What a wonderful time we had together. 16 years could have been much more, been wonderful. But thank you so much for 16 years, like the end of a concert. If I really express my emotions, young men, 16 years of old, especially in England, do not express emotions. We don't understand them. But if I'd have known what I was feeling, I'd have really annoyed people by standing up and giving a rousing cheer and applause. Well done, Dad. Yay! People don't understand that, but that's how I felt. So, and afterwards you'll find out from the suttas where it is. If you have a monk or a nun around who knows about the suttas, explain to them, say, ah, yes, I know where that is, over here. When you actually see it, the people actually in the time of the Buddha experience those things, the inspirational tears, and you see that, wow, that really gets to you. You know, this is, you know, you're not off track, you're really sort of right in there on the way. In Indonesia, if someone is anxious most of the time, what kind of meditation should be done? If you're anxious, just present moment awareness. Anxiety always needs a future to be anxious about. It also needs some negativity, you're tired. And no, reality is, yeah, there's some things go wrong, but so many things go right in this life. So much joy and happiness. You're in Indonesia, and it's a beautiful place. I've had so many wonderful experiences in Indonesia. I was telling someone today that when I went on Indonesian Airlines, a Garuda, went on Garuda from Perth to Bali, and from Bali to Yogyakarta for a conference. But as soon as I got on the Garuda flight, this flight attendant stopped and looked at me, right into my eyes, and said, "Are you Ajahn Brahm?" I said, "Yeah." And then she just put her hand over and just, "Oh, I must be your biggest fan in the whole of Indonesia. I've read all of your books, and they're wonderful. Oh, it's so wonderful that you're on my flight." And I knew I was going to be looked after on that flight. But then one of the amazing things which happened, after they served the breakfast, lunch, whatever it was, I got, you know, double portions or something. But then she said, "Oh, would you mind coming up to the galley in the front?" I said, "Yeah." I didn't know why. When I went there, all the flight attendants were lined up for a photo shoot. And that was just nice, you know, to have a photo shoot with all these air hostesses, one after the other and all together, and twos and threes. But all the time, they have all these little lights going on, bzz, bzz, bzz. All the passengers were paging the flight attendants for another beer. Because it was a flight over to Bali, and most of them were going there on holiday or surfing. Bzz, 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 we want another beer. And the flight attendants, oh, forget those. Another photograph. But they would, then when I walked back from the galley to my seat in the back, they were looking at me. Why are you disturbing our drinking? But I love Indonesia. It's beautiful. I'm not anxious at all. You get there in the end. Meditation on loving kindness and being the present moment, all that sort of stuff. Then anxiety doesn't, it's not there anymore. In Germany, why are we always so stressed and angry in our society in general? What can we do to be happy? Okay, stressed. From Germany, how heavy is this cup of water? I don't know how many times I've done this in the last couple of days. The longer you hold it, the heavier it feels. It's obvious. When this gets too heavy to hold comfortably, what should you do? You put it down. Let go. Relax. Rest. And you rest for 10 minutes, half an hour if you can. Pick it up. Even now, it actually does feel lighter. Try it yourself. When you relax, the muscles regenerate, and afterwards it feels lighter when you pick it up. Stress is nothing to do with how much work you have, all your burdens, responsibilities, duties. It has everything to do with not knowing how to put it down. Or not being courageous enough to put it down. So let it go and take a break, for goodness sake. I was yesterday, I'll let people know, I was at Woodside in town, teaching meditation there. Because they all get stressed out, you know, there's high flyers and just look, and all the bosses were there and said, look, you will get more out of your staff. They like that sort of idea. If you allow them to take a break. Remember, I said, the times when you were at school, you'd have recess in the middle of the morning, a lunch hour, and recess in the afternoon. Why? Because every child psychologist knows that you cannot put information into a kid's brain or skill training in the kid's brain hour after hour after hour after hour after hour and expect it to work. And every psychologist's brains knows, or every neuroscientist would know, you cannot work that brain to high functionality, you know, 8-9 hours a day, non-stop. You try that, what happens? It's happened to me before, you're just writing an article or trying to write an email, the words don't come. Why? Because you're tired. I know that enough now that I just stop writing it. I just put this thing down and just meditate or relax. It takes, well, for me, only 5 or 10 minutes because I know how to meditate. Other people, maybe just half an hour. Really relax. But when you meditate, for goodness sake, don't think of the thing you're supposed to be doing next. Have to be in this moment, calm, quiet, relaxed. You just meditate, have a wonderful time. And then, when the half an hour is over, you go back to the computer screen. Ideas just flow. And to really reinforce that message, and this is actually from Germany, he wrote this. You know that book which I wrote, Opening the Door of Your Heart, I think some of the best sales, it's really done well in places like Thailand, but it's given out for free there, and also where else, in Indonesia, the Cha Ching books, but also in Germany. It's been a Der Spiegel bestseller, Der Spiegel lists, for years. And the way it was written, some of that, I got the original manuscript in my room. The original manuscript, I wrote out by hand on paper, didn't have a computer at that time. And the first half of the book took 15 hours, 1 hour every day during a meditation retreat I had. I just kept it to 1 hour, and it really sort of surprises me, the The manuscript is almost perfect. There's hardly any mistakes. It's really clear handwriting. And that's actually what you read in the book. Hardly any editing. Maybe just maybe one sort of, maybe a comma where there should be a full stop. Just, you know, every page maybe, but hardly anything at all. And it was so quick and effortless. I said, that's what happens when you meditate, things just flow. And of course, that's how you write a book. No effort. 15 hours, that was half the book. I took a rest afterwards. The other one took maybe a little bit longer than 15 hours, maybe 16 or 17 hours. It's pretty nice for a bestseller. But I can't go further than, I can't miss out saying how it got published. All done out by hand. And, you know, Ron's story, maybe some of you remember Ron's story. You know, he's, Ash's around the back here. And he's just typed it all out for me. On a little disc, you know, one of these little, bigger than this disc. And I said, I'm going to Melbourne soon, please, please, please. You know, can you get finished in time? He finished it in time, typing it all out. It wasn't edited, just typed out. And I put it in my bag when I went to Melbourne, flew over to Melbourne. When I arrived in Melbourne, straight to the university to give a talk. Straight after the talk, just this woman came up and said, oh, that's a good talk, Ajahn Brahm. Look, I work in the publishing industry. If you ever have anything you want published, please let me know. I reached in this bag, here you go. And they published it. It was no effort at all. That's... Life is weird. When you really try hard, it takes a long time. When you relax, it's so easy. So that is actually how you de-stress and become successful. Okay, any questions or comments here before we go? Eddie?
Oh.
Yeah, I thought you would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the
Yeah, but if it works for you, fine. But there's no such thing as a big problem. We're going to die anyway, so let's get it over and done with. I don't know. Yeah, sure. You lose all your money, come become a monk or a nun. So we make small problems, big problems. We exaggerate. And this is, okay, I can't resist this one. Remember the old simile, how big is my hand? It's now such a big problem, I can't see any of you. The only thing I can see in the whole universe is my hand. That's how big a problem it is. Is it the hand which is the problem, or is it the perspective? You put it where it belongs at the end of the arm. Yeah, the hand doesn't change its size. I can see the hand, but I can now see you, Eddie, as well, and everybody else. So sometimes we make it a big problem because we hold it too close to us. Okay, anyway, time to pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can go. And then you can real question time starts. Oops. Anyway, thank you all for coming. It's very nice to see you all.
Okay.
Oh yeah, quite a few, the regulars, the addicts.